This is Zareen Caldwell bringing you the Soul Salons, exploring our spiritual heritage. I do occasionally feature major world religions in this series, so today I will focus on some Hindu sacred texts. I have to admit that I've been procrastinating on bringing you an episode on Hinduism because it's just so hard to get one's head around. There are so many different schools and philosophies and scriptures in this tradition, not to mention a whole lot of gods and goddesses. But before I get to that, let me start with a quote from the Upanishads, which are a group of texts that I will focus on today. Do only such actions as are blameless. Always show reverence to the great. Whatever you give to others, give with love and reverence. Gifts must be given in abundance, with joy, humility, and compassion. If at any time there is any doubt with regard to right conduct, follow the practices of great souls who are guileless, of good judgment and devoted to truth. Thus conduct yourself always. This is the injunction, this is the teaching, and this is the command of the scriptures. In that last passage, the word guileless comes up, and it's a word we don't use much today, but I looked it up and it means innocent and without deception. So the passage refers to great souls being guileless. Do you know anyone who is guileless? A word that has a similar meaning for me is authentic. But back to Hinduism. It hailed from ancient India and is one of the oldest of the world's major religions, and today it's the third most widely practiced religion after Christianity and Islam. The Vedic texts, or Vedas, are largely hymns and rituals that form the basis of the Hindu belief system. They were written in Sanskrit and appeared around 1500 years BC. The consensus seems to be that they were compiled by different sages, including some women apparently, which I always like. The Upanishads are part of the Vedas, and we'll get to that soon because that's the focus of the episode today. But a quick review of the Hindu organizational chart is worth a short introduction first. Despite paying homage to a variety of different deities, Hindus still believe that they all originate from a single eternal being. This principle or power is called Brahman. Later interpretations of Hinduism would describe this entity as having three parts or a trinity. That idea comes up in a number of different religions, of course. There is Brahma, which is the creative or emanating aspect of God, Vishnu, which is the sustaining or preserving aspect of God, and finally Shiva, or the destroying aspect of God. And by the way, this destroying aspect of God isn't quite as terrible as it sounds, because it's meant to pave the way for renewal. There are also many lesser gods and goddesses that come into the picture in Hinduism, of course. Some assert that there are millions, but the main ones seem to be around 30, as far as I can tell. Just for a sampling, there's Lakshmi, the goddess of good fortune, Ganesha, the remover of obstacles, and Saraswati, the goddess of learning and wisdom. Since the divine entity of Brahman, or God, is unknowable, he is worshipped through these more relatable forms. Some would claim that Hindus are polytheists, or people who worship many gods, but a more accurate description would be henotheists, which is another brand new word I learned, by the way. It means a belief in a single godhead or absolute reality that is worshipped through many different forms. Just quickly, one of the great epics in Hinduism is called the Mahabharata. It tells the story of a great battle between two families, and a part of the Mahabharata, or the Bhagavad Gita, focuses on a conversation between Krishna and a warrior named Arjuna. Some sources note that Krishna was both the author of and a character in this story. In my own tradition of the Baha'i faith, we would put Krishna in the category of a major manifestation of God. Anyway, in this dialogue, which I was a bit more interested in for this podcast, Krishna advises Arjuna to follow three spiritual paths to reach the reality of Brahma, or the Supreme Being. These include the path of devotion, the path of selfless work, and the path of knowledge. By taking these paths, one can cultivate spiritual virtues and rise above the ego. I'll share a couple of short quotes from the Bhagavad Gita about the goal of selfless work. Every selfless act, Arjuna, is born from Brahman, the eternal infinite Godhead. He is present in every act of service. All life turns on this law, O Arjuna. Whoever violates it, indulging his senses for his own pleasure and ignoring the needs of others, has wasted his life. And here's another quote. Strive constantly to serve the welfare of the world. By devotion to selfless work, one attains the supreme goal of life. Reading this passage made me stop and think a little bit about what selfless work really means. Is having a job, for example, to get a paycheck or advance your career, selfish or selfless? In my own tradition of the Baha'i Faith, we have a principle that work performed in the spirit of service is worship. So I guess it all depends on the attitude towards which you're approaching your job and your colleagues. We are here with the Soul Salons exploring our spiritual heritage, and today talking about Hinduism. I started this episode discussing Hinduism and Hindu deities generally because I felt like I had to give you that bigger picture first. But I did promise to focus on the Upanishads, which is what we'll do now. They are an important group of texts in the Vedas. There are apparently more than 200 Upanishads, but the first 10 are the oldest and most important. Today I'm only going to review three of these, the Issa, Katha, and Kena Upanishads. As a quick summary, the Upanishads center on the relationship between Brahman, or God, and how he exists in each individual as the Atman, or the inner self or soul. Different schools debate the nature of this Brahman-Atman linkage, which is an academic discussion that I am not going to go into here. But the basic gist is to know thyself. And I'm talking about knowing oneself at a deeper spiritual level, which is what the Upanishads are largely referring to. The first Upanishad that I'll talk about today is the Issa Upanishad, which calls the reader to be conscious of his or her inner reality and true self. All this, whatsoever exists in the universe, it starts, should be covered by the Lord. Having renounced the unreal, enjoy the real. Do not covet the wealth of any man. This Upanishad also touches on a higher consciousness that is united with all life, a oneness, if you will. He who perceives all beings as the self, notes the text, for him how can there be delusion or grief when he sees this oneness everywhere? By the way, I am using a book for this episode called simply The Upanishads, which is translated and published by Swami Paramananda in the early 1900s. The Swami's commentary throughout was also quite helpful. I'll give you an example. The text of the Upanishad says, if one should desire to live in this world 100 years, one should live performing karma, or righteous deeds. Thus thou mayest live, there is no other way. By doing this karma, the fruits of thy actions will not defile thee. I didn't really understand what this passage meant, it's quite confusing, but Swami Paramananda offers an interpretation. He explains that if a man clings to long life and earthly possessions, but is unable to follow the path of self-knowledge, then the next best choice is to perform right action or karma. Such actions are purified when they are done without selfish motive and for the sake of God. The Katha Upanishad, the second one that I'm talking about today, is a dialogue between a disciple named Nachiketas and Yama, the Lord of Death. It's an interesting story in which Yama gives Nachiketas 3 boons or wishes. But it's the third one that becomes the stickler. Nachiketas, the disciple, wants to know about life after death. At first, Yama, the Lord of Death, refuses to answer this question and instead offers him other gifts and distractions like great wealth. But Nachiketas turns aside from these temptations. Yama is testing him, in other words. The Katha Upanishad is quite long, but if I had to pick a common theme, I'd say it was how Yama tries to explain the importance of getting in touch with our higher selves versus pursuing fleeting worldly desires. This Upanishad has a lot of nice imagery and comments on the oneness of the visible and invisible worlds. There's a passage in this Upanishad on this theme that was one of my favorites. It goes like this. As rainwater falling on the mountaintop runs down over the rocks on all sides, similarly, he who sees difference between visible forms runs after them in various directions. You may have different interpretations on this passage, but to me it meant staying focused on the one source of the water rather than running after all the little streams. The Katha Upanishad also talks about the self with a capital S as never being born. Nor does it die. It did not spring from anything, nor did anything spring from it. This ancient one is unborn, eternal, everlasting. It is not slain even though the body is slain. It dwells in the heart of each living being. He who is free from desire and free from grief, with mind and senses tranquil, beholds the glory of the Atman. I mentioned the word Atman earlier. It essentially means the inner self or soul in Sanskrit. Swami Paramananda's interpretation for this Upanishad was also helpful. He explains how Nachiketas learns about the secret of death, not that there is a place where he can stay and become immortal, but that Yama shows him that immortality is a state of consciousness and is not gained so long as man clings to name and form or to perishable objects. For all the Hindus out there who might be listening to this podcast today, I think I probably owe you an apology for my mispronunciation of various terms. Many words in this tradition seem to have multiple syllables, so I have just done my best. So the last of the three Upanishads that I'll talk about here today on the Soul Salons is the Kena Upanishad. It's much shorter and is basically a disciple's questioning of the life forces within and how the finite differs from the infinite. This Upanishad explains how reaching the highest state of consciousness, or knowledge of Brahman, requires a purity of mind and dominion over the ego. There's a section of this Upanishad on the finite infinite theme that has a nice flow and cadence. I'll just share about half of these. That which cannot be thought by mind, but by which they say mind is able to think, know that alone to be the Brahman, not this which people worship here. That which is not seen by the eye, but by which the eye is able to see, know that alone to be the Brahman, not this which people worship here. That which none breathes with the breath, but by which breath is inbreathed, know that alone to be the Brahman, not this which people worship here. To conclude, some good takeaways from this episode, perhaps, are thinking about what selfless work means, practicing right action, and to consider where our thoughts are directed. Are they focused on the source or on rainwater running down mountains? I'll close with the lovely Hindu phrase namaste. Although it's commonly used in yoga practices now, it conveys a spiritual concept and means I bow to the divine in you. When you meet people today, it's a nice idea to think about. Namaste.